Imagine this. You've fallen in love with a lot. You've sketched out plans for your dream 3,000 square foot home. You're excited. You're ready to move forward. And then your architect delivers the bad news. Your city will only allow you to build a 2,200 square foot home. Wait, what? How is that possible? It's called floor area ratio, and it's the hidden mathematical formula cities use to control exactly how big you can build. In the next 35 minutes or so, I'm going to decode this crucial restriction so you can avoid one of the costliest surprises in home building, discovering too late that your dream home simply won't fit on your lot. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Awakened Homeowner. Thinking about a new home or remodel, but feeling lost in a maze of decisions? You're in the right place. I'm William Reed, and for over three decades, I've coordinated the design and construction of hundreds of remodel and new home projects. I know the process can feel overwhelming, but trust me, you can do this. Here we break it all down step by step so you can feel confident, empowered, and even excited about your project. No stress, no guesswork, just the guidance you need to bring your dream home to life. Let's dive in. Well, hello, everyone. Bill Reed here with The Awakened Homeowner, coming to you with episode 33 in our Understanding Design Limitations series. Today, we're tackling one of those things that I promise you, you don't know what you don't know. And trust me, floor area ratio falls squarely into that category for most homeowners. This is one of those restrictions that lurks in the municipal code, waiting to surprise unsuspecting homeowners who thought they understood what they could build. So last episode 32, we explored planning departments and city regulations. We talked about how those departments function, what they care about, and how to navigate their requirements. But today we're going to be drilling down into a single most important calculation that determines how big your home can actually be. And spoiler alert, it's not as simple as I can build whatever fits. The floor area calculation, FAR, as it's known in the world of design and city planning and building departments and architects and designers, is like kind of like a global master rule that is one of the first things that you will want to discover in your city or county. Now, not all cities and counties have this rule, but I would say more often than not, they exist. And you might even find that some jurisdictions require a minimum size home, which is kind of interesting. And that's so that in planned unit developments, we don't get somebody building, a little guest house and then never building their main house. But whether you're buying land to build your dream home or planning an addition to your existing house or dreaming about adding that second story, this episode might be the most valuable 35 minutes you spend before you even talk to an architect or maybe even before you purchase a property. So smart homeowners will look at some of these rules and regulations that we've been talking about and that we're going to be talking about before they actually purchase a property, especially if they have intentions to do a major remodel, renovation, or of course, build a new home. Because understanding floor area ratio before you commit to property or designs can literally save you tens of thousands of dollars in redesign costs or help you avoid buying the wrong property entirely. So let's get into it. What is floor area ratio? Why should you care? And most importantly, how do you navigate it successfully? So let me start with a simple question. If you own a piece of property, should you be able to build whatever you want on it? Your gut may say, yes, it's my land. And I get that. You bought it, you own it, you should have the freedom to build your vision, right? But cities have a different perspective that ultimately you better know before you shell out some dough. They're thinking about the neighborhood character, the infrastructure capacity, even the sunlight and the shadows, traffic patterns, parking availability, and overall livability. They're looking at the bigger picture, how individual decisions affect an entire community. So floor area ratio, FAR, is the primary tool they use to balance your property rights with community planning goals. So understanding the FAR isn't just about compliance and checking boxes. It's about setting realistic expectations before you fall in love with a design you can't actually build. It's about avoiding that heartbreaking moment when you discover you need to cut 800 square feet from your plans, or worse, realizing you purchased land that can't support your vision. So what exactly is floor area ratio? At its core, floor area ratio is beautifully simple. It's your total living space divided by your lot, expressed as a percentage. That's it. So building area divided by lot area equals FAR. So let me give you a concrete example from my book. Let's say your home with a proposed addition is 2,300 square feet and your lot is 6,000 square feet. If you divide 2,300 by 6,000, you get 0.38 or 38%. That's your floor area ratio, 38%. Now, cities establish maximum FAR allowed for each zoning district. So they might say that in your particular designation, maybe it's called R16, and you may remember that from the previous episode. Usually in a lot of cities, R6 or R16 means lots up to 6,000 square feet, meaning residential single-family lots up to 6,000 square feet, and they allow 45% FAR. So in our example, you're at 38% and the maximum is 45%. Sounds like you have plenty of room to grow, right? You've got a 7% buffer. That should give you some flexibility for changes in additions. Hold that thought, because we're about to discover why that comfortable 38% can very quickly become 47% over the maximum without you adding a single additional room to your plans. That's the nature of FAR calculations. They're deceptively simple on the surface, but the details will surprise you. A higher FAR indicates usually a denser development, so more building on less land. A lower FAR means more open space relative to the building footprint. So cities in urban areas often allow higher FARs, maybe 50, 60, even 100% in some cases, especially in commercial districts. But the rural or suburban areas with larger lots typically have lower FAR limits, maybe 30 to 40%. To preserve that open, spacious character. In many of the cities that I've worked in the Bay Area, California, such as city of San Jose, California, which is a very large city, smack dab in, you know, it's the capital of Silicon Valley, their FAR is 45%. And then as you go into the more affluent communities, as we get towards the hillsides and everything, you'll find that some of the FAR is 30 to 35%. So it's going to range from city to city, from county to county, if there is no incorporated area where you're building. So the formula itself is straightforward: building area divided by lot area. But here's where it gets tricky, and this is what catches homeowners and frankly, designers off guard. So why cities use FAR? So before we dive into the calculation surprises, and trust me, they're coming, let's understand why this restriction exists. Because once you understand the why, the how, it makes a lot of sense and you'll stop, you know, resenting these rules quite so much. So cities use floor area ratio primarily to control the mass and the scale of the buildings in residential neighborhoods. They're trying to prevent what I call the pink palace plopped in a classic neighborhood syndrome. Have you ever seen that when you've been walking around your neighborhood or visiting other friends' neighborhoods and where someone's built a massive house that just feels wrong? like it's looming over all the neighborhoods where every other house is a modest 1,800 square feet. And suddenly there's this 4,500 square foot behemoth that blocks views, casts shadows, and just overwhelms the street. That's exactly what FAR is designed to prevent. Now, what's happening in a lot of suburban communities, especially ones built in the post-war era, 40s, 50s, 60s, a lot of homes on 6,000 square foot lots, for example, in the city of San Jose, were, you know, modest 1,200 to 1,500 to 1,800 square foot homes. And that's what I grew up in. And then in the city of San Jose, as I mentioned earlier, their FAR is 45%. So guess what's happening? We have a little 1,200 to 1,800 square foot home. And then right next to it, we have a two-story, you know, 4,000 square foot home or whatever 45% of that is. And in city of San Jose, they don't count the garage. You can imagine a tiny little house next to this big, huge house, 45% of just living area, not including the garage. And we're going to get into those details today. But that's why sometimes you see some of these homes and you ask yourself, you know, why, how did this happen? Well, that's one of the reasons why it happens. So although FAR is designed to protect neighborhood character, sometimes the legacy rules that have been in place and then as neighborhoods evolve and go through a renaissance, this is what happens. Now, I suppose eventually all of the homes will be that large, but it'll probably be 50 years before it happens. So you've got kind of this mismatch going on throughout the neighborhood. So the other thing it does is the FAR, it preserves the property values by ensuring consistency and proportions, which is to your benefit. So once you get over the fact that somebody else is telling you how big your home can be, there's definitely some benefits so that when your neighbor tears their house down, you're not going to end up with a pink palace next to you. It manages infrastructure capacity because a neighborhood designed for 2,000 square foot homes has certain water, sewer, and traffic capacity built in. If you suddenly allow 5,000 square foot homes, you're exceeding the infrastructure design parameters. So the city in that neighborhood I was talking about, they've already replaced, I think, the sewer lines a couple times in my lifetime there, and that's because they're getting more and more load coming onto the systems. So FAR also preserves light, air, and open space between structures. It prevents every lot from being maxed out with a building, leaving, you know, no room for yards, gardens, or just frankly breathing room between buildings. And even then, you see how homes are just so close together. And, you know, and ultimately it's trying to create livable, balanced communities where buildings are proportional to the land they sit on. So the cities have good intentions with the FAR. They're not just arbitrarily restricting you. They're trying to create neighborhoods that work, that feel cohesive, that don't overwhelm their infrastructure or each other. But good intentions don't make the calculations any less confusing. They certainly don't make the surprises any less costly. Here's the fundamental challenge with floor area ratio. Every city calculates it slightly differently, and the elements they include in floor area, in quotes, often surprise homeowners. What counts as floor area is not what you think. So most people hear floor area and think interior living space, the square footage inside my walls, my bedrooms, my bathrooms, my kitchen, my living room. It kind of makes sense, right? But cities often include far more than just interior living spaces. They might include attached garages, even though you don't live in your garage, covered porches and patios, even though they're outdoor spaces, high or vaulted ceilings, sometimes counted twice for FAR purposes. And the list goes on. On top of that, easements. And we haven't got into easements yet, but we will. But easements can reduce your what's called net site area, which means you're dividing by a smaller number. And in my example, I'm going to do later on in this episode, I'll show you how that impacts your FAR. So on top of that, easements can reduce your net site area, which means you're dividing by a smaller number, which increases your FAR percentage. And if you have a sloping lot, some cities apply formulas that reduce your allowed FAR based on slope percentage. So as you're considering the purchase of a property, let's say, one of the things you're going to want to understand beyond the FAR is what are the easements on your property? Who else has rights to your property? It could be a utility company. It could be a pipeline. It could be a neighboring property that needs access behind your property that you may or may not be aware of. And all of this area of these easements can reduce your gross site area to your net site area, therefore compressing even more what you could potentially build on your lot. So that is what we're going to be showing you today. So the tragic timing issue is that, you know, most homeowners discover FAR limits too late. After they've purchased the property, after they started the design process, sometimes even after they've invested months and thousands of dollars into plans. I've seen it, and it's not very much fun. I've seen this scenario play out, you know, dozens of times over my 35 years in business. You know, homeowner buys a lot, they start working with an architect, they design their dream home together, every detail thoughtfully considered, and 3 months into the process, the architect says, "I just finished the FAR calculations for the planning department, and we have a problem. We're 15% over the allowed FAR." All of that could have been prevented if somebody had done their due diligence to begin with, if somebody understood the planning, zoning, municipal code regulations, like I mentioned in the previous episode. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. It may take a mathematician, but that is what I'm talking about today. How to enlighten, empower, and protect your experience. So there we go. So now they're scrambling, right? Do we redesign and cut square footage? Do we eliminate the garage, lower all the ceilings, remove that covered porch we loved? Or worst case scenario, they've already purchased a lot that simply cannot support their vision, and they're looking at a financial losses on resale. So this is the quintessential you don't know what you don't know moment. You didn't know to ask about FAR. You didn't know garages might count. You didn't know to research this before buying land, and now you're facing expensive consequences. But here's the good news. FAR is completely knowable and predictable. You don't need to be a planning expert or an architect. You just need to understand the specific rules for your property before you start designing, and definitely before you buy land. And that's exactly what we're going to break down today. I'm going to show you the 5 specific FAR calculation elements that consistently surprise homeowners. And then I'm going to give you a clear action plan for navigating FAR successfully. So let's dive into the surprises. The 5 FAR traps that catch homeowners off guard. All right, here's where FAR goes from theoretical to, oh no, this directly affects my project. I'm going to walk you through 5 specific calculation elements that consistently surprise homeowners. And I want you to pay close attention, because knowing these up front could literally save you tens of thousands of dollars in redesign costs or help you avoid buying the wrong property entirely. All right, quick reminder, everybody. Everything we're talking about today and so much more is in the Awaken Homeowner book. At less than 1/10 of 1% of your project cost, it's the best investment you'll make. Grab your copy on Amazon and keep it by your side throughout your entire project. Trust me, you'll refer to it again and again. So we're going to use a running example throughout this segment so that you can see how these factors compound. Ready? Let's start with the biggest surprise of all, your garage. So attached garages, more often than not, count towards the FAR. So picture this, you're planning a 2,300 square foot home on a 6,000 square foot lot. You do the math, 2,300 divided by 6,000, and your FAR is sitting comfortably at 38%. Your city allows 45%. Perfect. You've got a 7% buffer, plenty of room for adjustments and additions. Then your architect mentions almost casually, by the way, that 2-car attached garage counts toward FAR in this city. Wait, what? The garage? But that's not living space. Welcome to FAR calculation surprise number 1. attached garages often count towards your total floor area. Not in every city, the rules vary, but in many jurisdictions, if your garage is attached to your house, it's included in the FAR calculation. So a typical two-car garage is about 400 square feet. So let's recalculate 2,300 square feet of house plus 400 square feet of garage equals 2,700 square feet total. Now divide that by your 6,000 square foot lot. That 27 divided by 6,000, which equals 0.45 or 45% FAR. Congratulations, you just went from having a comfortable buffer to maxing out your allowed FAR. You're not at the absolute limit with zero flexibility. No future expansion, no room for error, no space to add that bonus room you were thinking about down the road. And this affects more than just your total square footage. It affects strategic decisions about your entire project. Do you really need a two-car garage, or would a single car work? Should you build a detached garage instead, which might fall under different rules, often lot coverage instead of FAR? But in some cities, detached garages still count in FAR. So you can see that there are some very high-level questions to ask the city or your architect, who hopefully has worked in the community, so that you can set your expectations, so you can manage your expectations. Or should you just skip a garage entirely and just have a carport or a parking pad? These are decisions you want to make consciously, strategically, during the early design phase, not as a desperate last-minute fixes when you discover you're over the limit, which does happen a lot. I've had clients who literally had to choose between a two-car garage and a larger living space, a choice they never saw coming, a choice they could have anticipated and planned for if they'd understood FAR requirements up front. So that garage isn't just a garage. It's eating into your total allowable building area, the space you thought was free because it's just for cars. It counts. It matters. It affects everything. But wait, there's more. Let's talk about the charming front porch you wanted. Covered outdoor spaces exist in this weird gray zone that many homeowners don't think about when they're calculating their building size. Is a covered porch part of your living space? You might say, no, it's outdoors. It's exposed to the elements. You don't heat or cool it. But your planning department might say, yes, it absolutely counts towards FAR. So here's the logic cities use. A covered porch with a roof integrated into the home and two or three walls could easily be enclosed in the future. It contributes to the overall mass and scale of the structure. It creates that visual bulk that FAR is designed to control. So even though it's not currently living space, it has the potential to become living space. And it definitely contributes to the building's footprint and presence. So typically, covered porches and patios count toward FAR. If they have a roof that's integrated with the house structure and two to three walls, an open-air patio with no roof, that usually doesn't count. A covered patio with four walls, that's definitely going to count. That's basically a room. So to clarify, you could have a front porch that you step into that's recessed into the house. So you'd have the wall where the front door is, and you'd have a wall on the left and a wall on the right. So that little rectangular square space counts as the FAR. It may only be 50 square feet, but if you're really pushing the limits, you can tell that it could change the dynamics of the design of the project. Now, if you step into that same entry and it does not have, only has one wall on the right and one wall where the door is, it still might count. You'll have to check with your city. If there are no walls, it probably wouldn't count. So that's the idea here, is this is how they have designed the rules to count it or not. But let's say, you know, you do have a 40 square foot entryway, right? That's got some walls and a roof over it. Let's add it to our running calculation. 2,300 square feet of a house plus 400 square feet of a garage plus 40 square feet of a covered porch. That's 2,740 square feet divided by 6,000. Now you're at 46%. F-A-R. That charming covered entry you've been picturing in your mind. Well, the one where you stand and fumble for your keys while you're staying dry in the rain, it just pushed your project over the legal limit. I know what you're thinking. This is ridiculous. It's only 40 square feet, but that's how FAR works. Every element compounds. Every covered space adds up, and cities are serious about these calculations. They will measure to the inch and hold you accountable. The good news is that open-air patios, concrete pads with no roof, typically don't count towards FAR, but they do often count towards lot coverage or impervious surface calculations instead, which we will cover in future episodes. But if you put a roof over that patio, now it might count. So understanding this distinction helps you make smart design decisions. Do you really need that roof over the side patio? Or can you achieve your outdoor living goals with an open patio and a nice umbrella? These are the trade-offs you can make when you know the rules. So we've got garages counting and covered porches counting. Surely regular interior space just counts as regular interior space, right? 1-to-1. A square foot is a square foot. Not so fast. Let's talk about ceiling height. This is one that really gets people and sometimes gets designers and architects too. This is the surprise that makes homeowners stare at me in disbelief when I explain it. So you know that soaring two-story foyer you've been dreaming about, the one where you walk in the front door and look up 18 feet to see a beautiful chandelier suspended above with a balcony overlooking from the second floor, that architectural drama that makes a home feel grand and spacious. Yeah, that might count as two floors for floor area ratio purposes. So many cities have rules that voluminous ceilings or vaulted ceilings, spaces where the ceiling height exceeds a certain threshold, often around 12 feet, count as double the square footage for FAR calculations. The logic? High ceilings contribute significantly to the building mass and scale. A room with a 20-foot ceiling has far more visual impact and physical volume than a room with an 8-foot ceiling. Even if the floor area is the same, cities argue that this volume should be accounted for in FAR, even though it's not technically a second floor. This restriction particularly impacts entries, foyers, great rooms, and living rooms, all those spaces where homeowners love to create drama with height. So let me add this to our running example. You decide against the vaulted ceiling in the entire living room, good move. But you still want high ceilings in the entryway, just the entry. It's only 50 square feet of floor space, but it has an 18-foot ceiling looking up to the second floor. This triggers inclusion of another 50 square feet in your FAR calculation. The city counts it as 100 square feet total, 50 for the floor, 50 for the volume. So our calculation now pushes us up to 47% FAR. Well, now we're well over the 45% maximum, and look at what happened. You started with a 2,300 square foot house at 38% by adding completely normal, desirable elements, a two-car garage, a small covered entry, and high ceilings in one room, you're now at 47%. You're over the limit without increasing your actual living space by a single bedroom or bathroom. This is why I emphasize that you need to understand these rules before you start designing. Because if you wait until 3 months into the design work to run your FAR, you're going to be making painful cuts, lowering your ceilings you love, eliminating the covered porch, maybe even shrinking the actual house. But if you know these rules up front, you can make strategic trade-offs during the design process. You decide, do I want high ceilings, etc. So, all right, we've gone from 38% to 47% FAR just by adding normal desirable elements. And we even talked about the lot itself potentially changing the equation. Let's look at easements. So, easements reduce what's called your net site area. So here's a twist that catches people off guard. What if I told you that your 6,000 square foot lot might not actually be 6,000 square feet when it comes to FAR calculations? Welcome to the concept of net site area. Easements are portions of your land where others have legal rights. utility companies, neighboring properties, access routes. A common example is a utility easement along the back or side of your property where the power company needs to access overhead lines or underground pipes. You still own the land, but they have rights to it, and you can't build structures on it. Now, here's where it affects FAR. Some cities, not all, but some cities require you to deduct easement area from your lot size when calculating FAR. This reduces the denominator in your FAR equation, which means your FAR percentage goes up, even though your building size hasn't changed. So let me show you how this works. Let's say you discover a 5-foot wide by 60-foot long utility easement at the rear of your lot. It's for your utility company, access to the overhead power lines. That easement is 300 square feet. If your city requires deducting easements from the lot size, you now have a net site area of 5,700 square feet instead of 6,000. So our calculation becomes 2,700 square feet of building, house plus garage, divided by 5,700 square feet of net site area. That's at 47.4% FAR. Same house, smaller lot denominator, higher FAR percentage. You're over the limit and you haven't changed a single thing about your design. So not every city handles easements this way. Some don't deduct them at all. Some only deduct certain types of easements, but this is exactly why you need to understand the specific rules for your jurisdiction. So I worked on a project recently where a homeowner purchased a 2.5-acre parcel. It seemed massive, plenty of room for their dream home with a space to spare, but the survey revealed a 20-foot-wide underground power easement cutting through about one-third of the property, plus some steep slopes on another section. What started as 2.5 acres over 100,000 square feet became effectively a 1-acre buildable acre once you accounted for the easement and unbuildable slopes. So for FAR purposes, the net site area was dramatically smaller than the gross parcel size. This significantly limited the home size far more than the client anticipated. That's why land surveyors are so critical. They identify and measure easements accurately. They provide the real data you need for accurate FAR calculations. Assuming your lot is the size of the tax records or estimating based on fence lines, that's a recipe for expensive surprises. So easements shrink your denominator, which inflates your FAR percentage. But there's one more lot characteristic that could really throw a wrench in your plans. And if you're building on anything other than a perfectly flat lot, you need to hear this. Trap number 5, sloping lots may trigger FAR reductions. So if you're building on a hillside or even a gently sloping lot, some cities have another surprise waiting for you, an FAR penalty, basically, based on sloping percentage. The steeper your lot is, the smaller they'll let you build. So many hillside communities, mountain towns, coastal areas, anywhere with significant topography have formulas that reduce the maximum allowed FAR based on slope percentage. You'll see things like, for properties with an average slope exceeding 15%, the allowed FAR shall be reduced by 10%, or whatever their specific formula is. So the logic behind this, steep lots require more extensive grading, larger retaining walls, and more complex foundation work. All of this disturbs the hillside. Cities want to minimize hillside scarring and environmental impact, so they discourage massive homes on steep properties by reducing the allowable FAR. And in general, when you look up at the hillsides and the foothills of your neighborhood, they really are trying to discourage a super large, massive scale home perched up on a hillside overlooking a community. So when you are working with your designer and your architect, the more that you can conform to the lot and scale it accordingly, appropriately, I should say, the better chance you have of getting it approved by the planning department. Let's just put it that way. So in some of my previous episodes, I talked about civil engineer or land surveyor. So this requires a civil engineer or land surveyor to calculate the average slope percentage of your property. And you can go back and visit some of my previous episodes on both a civil engineer or a land surveyor. I had two dedicated episodes to those. They use topographic surveys and specific calculation methods to determine whether your lot triggers these reductions. And this can significantly reduce allowable building size on those desirable view lots that everyone wants. So you know the lots with the amazing views, those are often the steepest lots, and the FAR penalty can be substantial. So here's kind of a real-world example. I've seen beautiful view lots with 25 to 30% average slopes where the FAR was reduced by 20 to 30% compared to flat lots in the same zoning district. So if a flat lot in an R1 zoning allows, 45% FAR, a steep lot in the same R1 zoning might only allow 30 or 35%. So that dream 4,000 square foot home you were planning, it suddenly becomes 3,000 square feet. Because of the topography, the sloping of the lot. Same lot size, same zoning, but the slope changes everything. This is absolutely critical to understand before you purchase any hillside property, amongst many other things about hillside properties that we will get into over the course of this mission. Because that $1 million view lot with the incredible vistas, it might only support a much smaller home than you envisioned. And if you don't research this up front, you're kind of in for a rude awakening. The good news is that this information is readily available. Your city or county has specific formulas published in their municipal code. A surveyor can quickly assess your lot and tell you if slope reductions apply. But you have to ask the questions before you commit to the property. All right, let's do this. I'm going to share my screen now, and I'll talk you through it. So those of you who are listening and not able to view, let's try to do that. And I'm going to describe what I'm doing. But if you guys want to hop over to YouTube, you can see a spreadsheet that I'm sharing right now. All right, so what I have here is a pretty quick look, and I don't mean to overwhelm you, but I want you to see what I've done here. On this project here, I'm calling this a typical FAR calculation. Hopefully you can see this. And I have a desired home of 3,000 square feet I thought I wanted to build, right? And I've done my research, and my allowable floor area ratio is 45% of the net site area. So remember, that's deductions for any type of easements that might be on the property. I know that my lot size is 100 feet by 120. So my total gross parcel size is 12,000 square feet. And I do know I have a right-of-way easement of 10 by 80 or 800 square feet that I have to deduct from my gross parcel size to get my net site area of 11,200. So one of your questions is going to be, does the city count this? Do they care? Some cities don't, which would be helpful for you. Now, I just decided that this is a parcel that has an average slope percentage of 15%. And in the city of Saratoga, California, they have a specific calculation on how they do it. And I want to show you this because it gets a little tricky. If my average slope lot is between 10 and 20%, I have to deduct 10% plus 2% for each 1% of slope over 10%. So if you remember, my sloping lot was a 15% slope. That means I have to deduct 10% plus 2 times 5. That's 5% over the 10%. So that's another 10%. 2% times 5 is 10. So you can see here, I had to reduce my average slope percentage by an additional 20%. Meaning my adjusted net site area is only 8,960 square feet. So my 12,000 square foot lot turned into 8,960 square feet. Now, this tells me my allowable floor area ratio still is at 4,000. Not bad. But I want to build a 2,000 square foot house on the first floor, maybe a 1,000 square foot house on the second floor. I have an area with some high ceilings. I have a covered porch, and I have a detached garage, and I have a shed. Sheds count. So detached garages in most jurisdictions count, and you'll have to ask that to make sure. If it doesn't, great. You're in a much better spot. Sheds often count too. If they don't count for floor area, they definitely count for what's called lot coverage, which will come another day. So now my 3,000 square foot living area home is actually 3,975 square feet when it comes to the FAR calculation method. My floor area ratio comes out to 44.36%. So I'm barely under by 57 square feet for this 12,000 square foot lot, right? So, and I'm getting, what I really am getting is a 3,000 square foot home. So that is what I'm demonstrating to you. So you can imagine if you got into a 6,000 square foot lot. So now my allowable floor area ratio is 2,300 square feet. So that, and let's say there's no easement on this property, which is not uncommon. And we still go with the 45%. And my gross floor area, let's say I wanted to build the same size house. But let's say that the detached garage didn't count in this particular city. And let's say we don't have a shed. So you can see my total floor area is 3,200 square feet. My floor area ratio is 55%. I'm well over what I was able to do on this. This is a relatively small lot, 6,000 square feet. So that means I'm going to probably just build, I may want to think about building a single-story house that's 2,400 square feet on that lot, right? So there you go. So that's an example of how you can manipulate the FAR calculations based on all of this criteria. And it's important. And if you know this before you buy a lot, or if you already own a property, before you start really getting excited about a project, this is something that you're going to want to really consider. So that is what an FAR, pretty quick look at FAR calculation is. I'll go ahead and stop sharing now. Let's wrap up the five traps. So there you have it. Five ways that FAR calculations can surprise you. Attached garages, covered porches, tall ceilings, easements, sloping lots. And any one of these can affect your project. Often several apply simultaneously, as you just saw in the spreadsheet I showed you. And the compounding effect can be dramatic. So let me recap a running example one more time so you can see the full picture. So this brings us to the most important question. How do you actually navigate the FAR restrictions successfully? Let's talk about your action plan. So you're probably thinking, Bill, this sounds complicated and full of landmines. How do I actually handle this without making mistakes? It's a great question. And here's the good news. Floor area ratio is completely transparent and knowable. It's not some mysterious black box. The rules are published. The calculations are straightforward. Sometimes, and you can absolutely figure this out before it becomes a problem. But keep in mind that if you're a homeowner that's hiring design professionals, an architect, interior designers, a design team for your project, this is kind of their job. But the reason I'm doing this today is I want you to be aware of it so that you can make sure that you're protecting your experience by asking, hey, how big of a home can I have? Is there a FAR calculation on my lot? If you said that to an architect, you know, they're going to go, this is an informed homeowner. They must have listened to the Awakened Homeowner podcast. So you just need to do your homework up front. And I'm going to give you a clear four-step action plan for navigating FAR successfully. Whether you're buying land, planning an addition, or just starting to dream about your project, this is your prevention playbook. This is how you avoid the homeowner who discovers FAR limits after months of design work and thousands of dollars invested. Let's get into it. Step one, research your property FAR before you buy or design. Gee, the absolute best time to understand FAR is before you commit to anything, right? Before you purchase land, before you hire an architect, and definitely before you start sketching floor plans or browsing Pinterest for design inspiration. This is prevention 101. This is the enlightened phase of enlighten, empower, and protect. We're gathering knowledge first. So here's exactly what you need to do. Visit your city or county planning department website. Most municipalities have their zoning information that I showed you in the previous episode, and they have their municipal code published online. Like I said, they all use the same website. They just put their own codes in there. And you're looking for your property's zoning designation, something like R16, R110, whatever. Once you know your zoning, then you can look at your FAR. Remember, FAR calculations are specific to your zoning. So if your lot's 40,000 square feet, it's going to be different than a lot that's 6,000 square feet. Now calculate what percentage means an actual square footage for your specific lot. If your lot is 6,000 square feet and the max is 45%, you know the drill. While you're researching, try to understand what's included in the FAR calculation. Do garages count? Covered porches, high ceilings. Some cities spell this out clearly. Others, you might need to call and ask. If you're buying land, make your offer contingent on FAR research and feasibility. Seriously, include language in your purchase contract that allows you to verify that the property can support your intended project. Don't commit until you know what you can build. Calculate a rough maximum building size before you fall in love with the property. Don't get emotionally invested in land before you've done the math. You know, I can't tell you how many clients I've worked with who've purchased their dream lot, spent weeks imagining their perfect home, then discovered the FAR would only allow them to build 60% of what they wanted. That's a heartbreaking and expensive lesson. So spend a couple hours researching this on the planning department website before you spend, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars on your plan. Step two, involve professionals early. Your architect, a surveyor, a planner. So here's a fundamental principle that I emphasize throughout my book and this podcast. The earlier you involve qualified professionals in your project, the more money and heartache you save. Floor area ratio is a perfect example of why that's true. Hire an architect before finalizing your land purchase, if at all possible. I know that sounds backwards. Why would I hire an architect before I even own the land? But here's why. Architects understand local FAR calculations. For what would take you a weekend, maybe, to figure out and calculate, they can do within probably a half hour. They know how to interpret the municipal code, right? They navigated these rules hundreds of times for a few hundred or couple thousand people. And maybe it's just a consultation fee you pay. You know, it's insignificant compared to the land cost and especially the building cost. And they can really help you. And that's something that has to be done anyway before you begin designs. Get a jump start on it so that you can just put that behind you and know that you're good. And, you know, compare that to buying the wrong lot and losing $50,000 in resale value because you can't build what you wanted, right? That consultation fee is the best money that you'll ever spend. It's insurance against massive, expensive mistakes. So beyond architects, land surveyors provide accurate lot measurements and identify easements. So remember, our discussion about net site area, you need a surveyor to tell you exactly what your lot dimensions are, where the easements exist, and what's your actual buildable area. Don't estimate, don't assume, get precise measurements. Now, keep in mind that it's very possible that an existing property owner may already have a survey that has been done that you can use. So in part of the disclosure documents in your real estate transaction, you can request that if you have any documents pertaining to the property, that they disclose those, and they're then required to do, assuming they agree to it. So if you're looking at a hillside property, civil engineers can assess slope percentages and tell you if FAR reductions apply. They'll create topographic surveys and run the calculations according to your city's formulas. The key is involving these professionals before you commit to the property, not after. So ask your architect specifically, can you verify FAR feasibility for this lot and my design program? Give them your rough vision, number of bedrooms, square footage goals, must-have features, and ask them to reality check it against the property FAR limits. Professional fees for preliminary research aren't overhead, they're insurance, and I've said that before, I know. They're protection against making six-figure mistakes. This is the empower phase, leverage expert knowledge, and make informed decisions. And this also gives you a chance to get an early jump on finding architects, finding contractors, finding design consultants such as surveyors or civil engineers really early on. So you can kind of mix the two together, and assuming you're going to buy the lot, perhaps you already have an architect on board. And I've always advocated that architects provide tremendous value when you're considering purchasing land. Their expertise in placing structures on parcels and their knowledge of local rules and regulations are really invaluable. For a relatively small investment up front, they can save enormous amounts of money and frustration down the road. So bring in the experts early, make them part of your property evaluation process, not just your design process. But even with professionals on your team, you need to make sure you're getting specific documented answers about your specific property, which brings us up to step three. Get specific FAR rules in writing. So here's critical insight from 35 years in the business. Never assume FAR calculations are the same from city to city, even with the same county. And never, I repeat, never rely on verbal interpretations without written documentation. FAR definitions and what's included in the calculations vary significantly between jurisdictions. What counts towards FAR in one city may not count in the neighboring city. Rules change, interpretations evolve. You need documentation. So when you're researching your property's FAR, document the specific rules for your city or county. Don't rely on general knowledge or assumptions and get specifics. Contact your planning department and ask for written confirmation of the FAR percentage allowed in your zoning district. What elements are included in floor area calculations? Do garages count? Covered porches, high ceilings? How easements affect the net site area, whether any slope adjustments apply, and any other unique aspects of how your city calculates FAR. Which brings us to the design phase itself. Step four, design with FAR in mind from day one. Once you understand your FAR limitations and have them documented, communicate them clearly to your entire design team, or hopefully the architects already communicating to you what the FAR is. And this isn't something to figure out halfway through the schematic design process, design step one that I've spoken about. The FAR needs to be a fundamental parameter from the very first sketch. Doing the math up front will help you make strategic trade-offs early in the design process. This is where you ask, you know, do I want the garage more than I want those extra bedrooms? Do I want high ceilings more than I want that covered patio? Do I want attached garage convenience more than I want maximum house size? It's going to be very personalized, very tailored to your own needs and the property. You know, it's good to build in a buffer too. Don't design to the exact maximum allowed. If your FAR, you know, limits are 2,700 square feet, design to 2,650 or something, just so that you have a little bit of a buffer when the planning department says, oh no, you didn't measure it exactly right, and you have to go all the way to this side of the wall or something. And you can see in the past that it can really add up. So leave room for some minor adjustments and ensure you're safely under the limit. The last thing you want to be fighting is 50 square feet during the permit review process. And here's one. Ask your architect to verify the FAR compliance, you know, at each design checkpoint. When you finish schematic design, check FAR. When you complete design development, design step two, check FAR, and then verify it again. So make it part of your regular quality assurance processes. And I'm saying this because during the design process, things change from schematic to design development. Rooms grow. I want to bump this out 2 feet. I want the front porch a little bit deeper. You know, these are the things that happen during the design process. So a lot of times people don't circle back and go, oh, wait, are we exceeding the FAR? So that is something that you want to be really careful with as you're getting excited about your design and not realizing that you've exceeded the FAR. Nobody really told you. So let's wrap this up. So here's your FAR navigation plan summarized. Research your property's specific FAR rules. Involve your architects or surveyors. Get everything in writing so there's no ambiguity. Design with FAR is the fundamental parameter from day one. This is kind of like this overriding rule, and then we're going to be just digging deeper and deeper. They're all related to each other, but the FAR will govern just about everything that's going to be underneath these rules. All right, so if you want to dive deeper into floor area ratio and all the other design limitations that we're covering in this series, grab the copy of the Awakened Homeowner book, and this particular limitation is in 2.306, where it breaks down FAR in even more detail. Plus, you'll kind of get a complete roadmap for navigating zoning ordinances, setbacks, height restrictions, lot coverage, impervious surface, and all the other rules that are going to affect your project. And, you know, the book is designed to be your reference guide throughout the entire planning and design process. Every question we're addressing in this podcast series is covered in depth in the book, with even more examples, calculations, and kind of real-world scenarios. And of course, you can find it on Amazon, and you can see it in the show notes. There will be a link there. And I'd love to hear from you. Have you run into FAR surprises on your project? Did your city have unusual calculation methods that caught you off guard that maybe I didn't even talk about? And, you know, what do you wish you'd known earlier? And you can drop a comment on the YouTube or send me a DM on Instagram. And if this episode helped you understand the floor area ratio, if it clarified something that was confusing or prevented you from making a costly mistake, share it with someone who's planning a project. Send it to your friend who's looking at land to buy. Forward it to your family member who's planning an addition. This information could literally save them from expensive surprises. So next time on The Awakened Homeowner, I'm going to get into more of these design limitations, and I haven't decided which one to cover, but I might talk about easements next. So I just want to thank you for spending the time with me today. I know your time is valuable, and I really appreciate that you're taking these steps forward to protect your experience. And one thing about the mission of the Awakened Homeowner is you are going to be a prepared homeowner, a prepared client for the design pro that you're going to be interfacing with. And they love it. If they know that a future client or a potential client is prepared and knowledgeable, it makes their job a lot easier. And if you go in prepared, you'll find a very expeditious and effective design process. And we covered a lot of technical ground, but I hope you see why it matters. You're not just building a house, you're orchestrating your dream home. And it may be you do this once in a lifetime. And that orchestration starts with knowing what's possible and understanding the constraints and planning strategically from the very beginning. So that's what the Awakened Homeowner is all about. Enlighten you with knowledge, empower you to make informed decisions, and protect you from costly mistakes. And I'm Bill Reed, your home building coach. Let's make it happen. Thanks for tuning into The Awakened Homeowner. Remember, you've got the power to take control of your project from day one. If you're ready to dive deeper, grab The Awakened Homeowner book on Amazon. It's your roadmap to success, join our community at theawakenedhomeowner.com and download our free story, The Tale of Two Homeowners. And here's something exciting. I'm developing an app called BuildQuest that's going to revolutionize how you plan and manage your project. Visit buildquest.co to become a founding member and test drive the app when it launches. Follow us on social media and hit that subscribe button. All the links are in the show notes and bio. Got questions? I'd love to hear from you. This is Bill Reed. You got this.